say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be. You need another.
Hello, welcome to a new direction with me, your host, Ralph Peterson. I know you were thinking I was going to say Jay Izzo. Well, Jay Izzo is not here. Don't worry, he's fine. Everything's fine. He just needs a little R&R. But I am here. No worries. Going to hold down the fort again. It's Ralph Peterson, and I am so super excited to be here with my friend Tyler Foley. Hey, Tyler, how you been, brother?
Oh, I'm doing really good, Ralph, and just making sure that I'm sharing out to all of our friends. I see us live, so I want to, you know, make sure that we're getting a message out as best we can.
Perfect. That is exactly what we need to be doing. Share. If you see this live stream, share it, right?
That's right.
We're here talking to Tyler Foley about his book, The Power of Being Naked, or The Power to Speak Naked. By the way, not to wig out at all, but this is the same outfit I had on earlier. So,
me too. I love that we went from our one outfit to our other outfit, and we're still matchy.
We are. I did not realize that until you just brought it up. We're
just now.
We're synonymous. We're this is our Jay attire. So Jay Izzo is very, very dark and ominous. You know. So maybe that's what we're just. Enveloping our Jay Izzo. That's really great. So, Tyler, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm super excited to get to know you and to talk more about your book, which is like a step-by-step guide on really what it takes to be a professional speaker and to be an effective speaker. And I thought it was really great, and I really enjoyed it. And so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So I know that Jay has a very certain specific way of doing the show. Well, I'm not Jay. So I too have a certain specific way of doing a show, but really what I want to like to start with is you have such a great bio, but instead of just reading the bio, I would just love to know about you. So can we just start there?
Absolutely.
Where do you live now? Like, what state are you living in?
I am not living in a state. I am living in a province. I am
Canada.
North,
I knew that.
Yeah.
I apologize.
North of the 39th parallel. So I am in Calgary, Alberta.
Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, I did grow up in the area. I've lived all over the world, but Calgary's kind of like the mob. It brings me back every time.
Oh, I think we all have those places, right? There's always a place where you identify with the most.
Yeah, there are a lot of places that I have lived, but Calgary will forever and always be home.
And that's where you grew up?
Yep, grew up, born and raised.
So how was that? What was that like? What'd you do? What was it like being at school, a kid, mom, dad?
Well, I've had a really interesting life. My dad actually passed away when I was 6 years old to a motor vehicle accident. Wow. And as a result of that, or byproduct, or possibly as a pinged trajectory, I ended up getting on stage as an outlet. So performing. In stage productions. And I started that very young. So 6 years old was the first time I was on stage, and I was hooked at that point. I was born a performer, but didn't realize it until the first time I heard an audience give me applause. And from that point on, you know, that was kind of my focus and my direction. I would do school plays all through elementary, junior high, high school. Fun. I actually went to a fine arts high school specifically to study stagecraft, musical theater and performance, television arts, and had an agent very young. So I've been, again, film, television, and stage since I was six. I actually retired from acting at 25.
Because at that point, at 25, what?
When you've had a 20-year career, that's who, you know, like, and that's the advantageous part of starting so young was that I had 20 years in the industry at that point. So I retired, went to school, to university, got a engineering background and discipline, started my own business. It was an aerial photography and surveying firm. That business unfortunately collapsed. But then I was able to pivot and do what I do now. So it's been a real joy and pleasure. And I'm back acting. Again, it's the mob too, you know. So I don't do it to the degree or the level that I did when I was younger. But you know, I did 5 or 6 auditions last month, booked a role, you know, small stuff on local television here, but it's fun.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. I too am a storyteller. So I have been telling stories from a very young age. My parents at the time called it lying, but I was really into storytelling. And you know what's so great about, you know, learning about your history and where you came from and spent all this time really on stage kind of honing this craft. You tell me if this is accurate or not, but it kind of, for me, it kind of forces me or entices me to be bigger, bolder, and better than I could ever be because I want to be impressive on the stage.
Oh, absolutely. And vice versa, I find that a lot of what I have learned through my performance, through my stagecraft, through just being a performer has helped me in everyday life. Because I come across as having this gregarious and very outward personality, I think a lot of people assume that I'm an extrovert, but the reality is I'm an introvert. I am very, very uncomfortable in social situations. I really don't like crowds or small talk and mingling. And so to be able to draw on some of that performance aspect or even take on a character of, you know, Sean Tyler Foley, performer, actor, is quite a joy, as opposed to Tyler, who is, you know, really actually more reserved than I think most people understand.
It's so interesting that you can play both sides of that, where most introverts that I know could not pretend to be an extrovert. That's the whole point of being an introvert.
It's true. And I don't pretend to be an extrovert. What I do is I take on a character that is larger than I would be, a very exaggerated form of myself. You know, when you go to the carnival or a beach in Mexico and they have those caricature drawers?
Sure.
Right. And so you'll have an artist who does a caricature of you, and he or she will focus on your features and will exaggerate some of them. And you look at that caricature and you know it's you. Like, you're like, oh yeah, no, that is a cartoon version of me. It's exaggerated. You can still tell it's you, but everything is just exaggerated just slightly. And that's
somehow rounded.
Exactly. And that's what I tend to do with myself, is that there's me. But if I have to do any kind of public engagement, I'm going to exaggerate some of those features about me to better represent what will serve that audience best. You know, it's not changing who I am. It's just accentuating certain features and bringing them to the forefront.
You know, I wanted to just jump right in with a thought and a comment, but then I realized I just needed to let it breathe, because what you just said was really impactful. And it's the idea of, and you go over this in your book, understanding your audience, understanding what your purpose is there, knowing what your mission is, realizing how to deliver it, what the points that need to, you know, everything that you say in your book, you kind of just said in 6. That's it. The new direction is over.
Drop the mic.
Wrapped it up in a 30-second. No, it's really, really telling, both not just about the craft, but your understanding of it, which is really, really impressive. Because it comes through in the book, and obviously just came through there, where it really is paying attention to the audience. You know, as a writer myself, I am some reason I wanted to do it like that. I always love the idea that words are like songs. They're like music. They have a cadence. They have a flow. They have silences. They have pauses. They're accentuated. And that is very much like a speech. It has this ebb and flow. Like, if you were to put it on a graph, it takes the audience on this journey, right? And the only way that we can do that, to your point, is by understanding exactly what it is that I'm supposed to be saying, how I'm supposed to be saying it, how my audience is perceiving me, how I'm perceiving my audience. It's really great.
And deeper to that, it's actually knowing who you are intrinsically. I know that a lot of speakers, particularly when they want to get larger and you start developing a significant audience and you're a content provider, thought leader and all of that, the buzzword right now is they're authentic.
Oh.
And I hate that word personally. Drives me insane. I don't like it. I think it's overused and frankly misunderstood currently in the industry. I think that authentic is synonymous with self-awareness. I think these really good speakers who have the ability to really powerfully communicate know who they are intrinsically and know what their moral compass is, know what their value sets are, and they don't waver from it. And that's what creates a truly authentic and engaging experience. I know a lot of people who try to be authentic by, well, this is my brand, this is who I am, you know, I swear, and because I swear, I'm authentic. Well, I swear too, a lot. I grew up on a farm, you know, I very similar to Jake, you know, I'm a rural boy at heart. And I swear better than most truckers or sailors, but you're not going to catch me do it on this show. It's not that I'm not being authentic. It's that I'm understanding my audience and what needs to be done. And it's not served necessarily by swearing. I think I've sworn once on a live broadcast in the last month, and it was literally one swear word, and it was done specifically to serve the audience in telling a tale. It was very calculated and very specifically done. That doesn't mean that I'm not being authentic right now. What it means is that I am aware of who I am. I'm aware of my messaging, and I will always be able to bring it forward so that, you know, whether you're reading the book or you're listening to me speak, there is no difference. And pro insider tip, it's because I actually spoke my book. I didn't write it. The book was transcribed from all of my training videos. So when I say that this is in my voice, I truly mean it was done in my voice.
That's super fantastic. I like that too, because there is, I think you're absolutely right. And I hadn't quite put it together like this before, but you're right where people think that their authenticity trumps my comfortability. And when I'm your audience, I matter, not you. Take your authenticity and shove it, right? It doesn't, you have to serve your audience. And when you don't serve your audience, and you talk about this in the book too. We're going to get to the book in just a second. I'm talking to Tyler Foley, Sean Tyler Foley, if you're looking at the book cover, because we're all confusing here. It's Sean Tyler, but you can just go by Tyler.
Just by Tyler. All right. As you and I discussed, if you ask who my wife is married to, she'll say Tyler. So don't tell her she's married to Sean. She'll look confused.
That's right. We're talking to Tyler, Sean Tyler Foley, and his book is all about the power to speak naked. And of course, we were both in the same outfit earlier, and we apparently wore the same. Mine's a little more beat up than yours. My copy. I've been taking notes.
I appreciate that.
But you talk about it in the book, and again, we'll get to it. You talk about it in the book that the idea that you have a real ability, if you're not careful, to completely, I don't remember the word you used, but you can insult your audience. Oh, you know what you talk about? You talk about insulting the venue. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, you know, like you could be bashing the venue or some aspect of it. And unfortunately, full disclosure, I've made that mistake. I've made the mistake where I made it. I took a cheap shot at my audience. Mm-hmm. How stupid was that? Like
Well, and we've all done it. I've been there. Tell me your story.
My story is real simple. They didn't call me back. Yeah. That's it. That's the reason I did all this upfront work. They were excited to have me. I was excited to be there and have them. I got there, and then for some reason, I made it about them when I was supposed to be making it about me, the bad parts. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get him back on the phone. Not there was maybe 50 people. Not one person returned my call.
Well, and that's, you know, again, that comes back down to knowing your core messaging and knowing why, right? Why am I even here? And having your audience's best needs met. Like, what do I need to do to serve my audience so that they walk away from this presentation better than I found them? And that's ultimately your only goal as a speaker. And I think a lot of people confuse having to give complete and total life-altering transformational speaks or talks versus just having to implant a seed or an idea that will perpetuate a new way of thinking for somebody, right? It takes years and decades to grow an oak tree. I may not be able to see the end result because it may be very distant down the future. All I need to do is plant that acorn. Now, if I can further water it, give it a little bit of fertilizer, maybe some sun, and watch that seedling grow, great. But as a speaker, my job simply is to give that first idea, give that first push. And then if I am invited back, or if people really want to engage with me, they like the content that you're providing, that's when you get to really work with them and see that growth and be the greenhouse to grow this crop. But initially, you're just seeding, and you don't need to make it this big life-altering thing. And the other thing is give the good stuff at the beginning, right? Set people up for success so that growth can happen fairly rapidly. I know a lot of professional speakers are very protective of what they're going to share initially. And I believe in giving the three golden nuggets up front. Like, what is your absolute best material right now? What can you do for me right now? Because if you can do that, then I want to know the more. And then we can start digging the depths and mining for the really good stuff. But I want the big nugget right now. And then you can make me rich with the coarse, fine gold.
I like that a lot. And you know what it kind of reminds me of? Is the idea that what we're looking for is a breakthrough. And then the long term is a mastery. Mm-hmm. So the initial is just a breakthrough. The initial is the aha, right? I mean, and at the same time, I have, you know, the great late Rush Limbaugh in my head. And he says, I'm a big fan. He used to say, audiences, I studied radio, right? So I'm a big into radio. So he was one of the best. He said, audiences want three things. They want to be entertained. They want to be entertained. And they want to be entertained. And I'm always cognizant of that. You know, like, we don't take Robitussin flavored Robitussin, right? We take grape flavored Robitussin, grape flavored cough medicine. You know, you have to have a little bit of flavoring with your medicine. And sometimes we come in gangbusters. We're just going to give you the medicine. Even if it's that spray stingy stuff, we're just going to spray it on your open wound. Oh, too bad. This is good for you. You know, you're like, Hey, can we get a little less aggressive with your, you know, better than I do, you know, mentality, right? Which is, yeah, it's so easy to get preachy.
Well, and that's where, again, knowing who you are and being true to yourself when you're doing it will probably take away from a bit of that being on a pulpit. I know when I get on my soapboxes, you know, there are things that are dear to me in my core messaging and what I instruct, you know, one of them being that authenticity is synonymous with self-awareness, and I'd rather you be self-aware than quote unquote authentic. The thing that you're afraid to say is the thing that your audience very likely needs to hear. These are at the root of my teaching, but I also know that I can't just ram it down your throat. It has to grow organically. And you can allow it to grow organically by knowing who you are and knowing that eventually it's going to come out, but allowing your audience to cue when that appropriate time is by having a conversation with them, as opposed to this one-way monologue where you're just spewing information at them and expecting them to drink it like it's coming from a fire hose. That's where the real transformation happens, when they can process on their own terms in their own time.
I think that's a tweetable moment you just had there. You said, I'd rather you be self-aware than authentic.
I'll tweet it out at the end.
Wrap that up in a bow. One Direction, a New Direction, One Direction, isn't that a band? A New Direction with me, Ralph Peterson, not Jay Izzo, not today, tomorrow or next week. He'll be here. But in the meantime, I am here with Mr. Tyler Foley and his great book, The Power to Speak Naked. Let me hold it up again before I go into my copy reading. Pardon me just a minute while I pay some bills here. For more than 35 years, Linda Kraft and her team has been helping people all over the world with their real estate needs. From selling to buying, Linda Kraft has developed relationships with the best professionals in your area. By the way, a little side bit here. My mom is in the process of trying to sell her home. And you know what's funny about trying to sell a home? You also have to be in the buying home business. Didn't realize that, but it's been a while since I've sold a home. Forgot that you have to also be buying a home and selling a home. You can't just sell. You have to get somewhere. Linda Kraft, she can help both, just so you know. To have my mom reach out to her. She, sidebar, she is able to do this because she is completely independent, independently owned and operated and unaffiliated with a national company, which allows her to find the absolute best and most trusted real estate professional for you. So when you are ready to sell, the copy says or, but it's and buy your next home, your first home, your last home, start with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com, LindaCraft.com. This is also being brought to you by Epic PT. Whether you're recovering from an injury or surgery, having difficulty performing activities of daily living in the long-term care field, we call those ADLs, or are unable to perform athletic activities. He probably didn't expect I was going to ad lib. I should just read the copy, but this is a new direction with Ralph Peterson, and we're taking it in a new direction. We have our guest here, the great Tyler Foley, the power to speak naked. Let me finish this copy. Pardon me. Epic PT. I already started at the beginning. I'm ruining the copy. What are you going to do? If you are injured, if you need help, if you need rehab, make sure that you go see the elite team at Epic PT, who will provide you with a customized treatment plan tailored to your individual needs. With their experience in rehabbing young athletes to elite professionals, they understand the need to treat the entire body as a functioning whole, not just your symptoms and your injury. When you're ready for your epic relief, your epic recovery, and epic results, go on over to epicpt.com. That is EPICPT.com. If there's a business name that kind of fits with the business, Epic PT is pretty great, right? That's an epic name.
It is certainly an epic name. I love what you did there. Very on the nose.
Humor. All right, let's get into this book. First and foremost, what about the dragon? Do you know the poem by heart? I know you started. There was here we go.
Yeah.
Silence, so, please.
I will not be reciting it right
I
now.
I thought maybe.
I've loved that poem. Since second or fourth grade, I can't remember when I first performed it. The details have lost, and I've actually tried to find a copy. I've searched it a few times, trying to find it. I know there's a Shel Silverstein one, but it's not the right one. And it's the one that I keep finding in the search. And I'm like, no. It's a cross between the Shel Silverstein story and Puff the Magic Dragon. What ends up happening is that, you know, the boy meets this dragon, the dragon goes through its life, and then the dragon passes away. I can't find the poem for the life of me. I'm happily to read the Shel Silverstein one for you.
But you start the book, you're just talking about where you came from. And again, we kind of went through your story, but I think it's fun that one of the first things you learned how to do is actually read poetry, which can be quite challenging, especially as a kid.
Well, and again, I was lucky and blessed because at that point I'd already been on stage, and my teacher had suggested and strongly insisted that I enjoy or that I sign up for the regional speech competition. In fact, I think she had signed me up before she had asked me if I would do it, and she just said that I would do it. And she had picked out the poem, not I. And I loved it. I was enthralled with it instantly. And she was a phenomenal teacher too. She was our music teacher and helped with performance. And so I got to work with her and really explore what the text meant. And I was always somebody who who really enjoyed fantasy works. My father had read to me The Hobbit. It was one of the last things that we actually did before he passed away. When I was five, we went on this cross-country drive to go see my grandparents who were on the East Coast. And while we took, I think it was 2 weeks driving in a station wagon across Canada, every night we'd camp and he would read The Hobbit to me. And so I loved the idea of Smaug and dragons and fantasy. So when I got this poem, it was interesting because all other literature that I'd read on dragons were these big, bad, evil things. And this was the first time where I got to explore what it would be like to live as a dragon, to be free, to be able to fly and be misunderstood. He just wanted a friend and a companion. So in this poem, he's just looking for a friend and companion. He finally finds it in this little boy. And the little boy and him play, and he watches the boy grow and age and then disappear out of his life because dragons live, you know, eons longer than humans. And the heartache that the dragon experienced in losing his friend, because it's all he'd ever wanted in his life. And it was easier in the beginning because he didn't know what he was missing, and kind of the regret of loss and things unsaid. And there was a lot of subtext and themes within that. So to be able to explore, especially younger, like how would I feel if I lost that? And I could tie it back to, you know, the passing of my father. And I'll never forget when I read that poem at the competition. There were, I believe, three adjudicators and then like a guest judge. And so there's four people sitting at the table, not a dry eye. It was a rewarding moment for me because I was quite emotional in it. Like I found the emotional subcontext, which is what you were referencing in the book when I say, you know, you need to find the emotional context behind it. But to see them, and then to the crowd, and it's, you know, not well attended. It's a regional speech competition for, you know, elementary and junior high students. So there might have been 50 people in the crowd, but all 50 were choking up, and that was a beautiful moment. I really enjoyed it.
It's really great. And again, we're talking to Sean Tyler Fuller.
Whose friends call him Tyler.
You have to say Sean Tyler quickly, right? That's Sean Tyler.
Well, and properly, that's how my name is supposed to be. So if you were to ask my mom who she gave birth to, she would say Sean Tyler Foley. Sean got Tyler it. As like Jean-Luc. Unfortunately, you tell people that your name is Sean Tyler, and they go, hi, Sean. And then it's nails on a chalkboard to me. My name is not Sean. And I know the people who don't know me or who have had this conversation because they'll call me Sean. Sean Tyler or Tyler, like you and I had talked offline. If you ask my wife who she's married to, she's gonna say Tyler.
I got. I'm now holding my thumb over the word Sean so I don't mess it up here.
Yeah, we'll do that too. I'll do it too, just like that.
We're talking to Sean. I mean, geez, Louise, Tyler Foley, the power to speak naked, the power to speak at all. I'm Ralph Peterson. This is the Jay Izzo Show, A New Direction. What you just kind of went through and talked about when you're just describing how you even came to telling the poem, getting the poem, learning the characters within the poem, figuring out the emotional connection. Once again, you just laid out everything that you say in the book, from how to plan, how to visualize, how to understand your audience, understand the character you're playing. So let's just go through it a little bit here. I don't want to read the book because I think people should just go out and get this book and read it themselves. So I'm going to skip around a bit. But first and foremost, just highlighting that whole aha moment. So once you came off the stage, once you know, you said it right in the beginning, you know, once you got a clap, once the audience liked you and you're like, all right, this Can I get this drug somewhere else? And the answer is no. You got to keep doing this. You're like, all right, I'll keep doing this then, right? The feedback from your audience is really pretty fantastic. And then, so the first thing you start out with in the book is how to consider your audience, the demographics, the topic, the cultural makeup of your audience. Can you talk about that at all? Like,
sure. And as I do, one of the things that I would, it's interesting that you mentioned it. I'm not worried about if an audience likes me.
You say that in the end of the book. I know.
Yeah. That is not my goal to be liked. If that is any speaker's goal, they're going to find the speaking profession very frustrating and very lonely very quick. My goal is to know if I like my audience. I want to make sure that I have served them in a way that then rewards me, that they have gotten. So I focus on the audience, which is why we go through in the book the entire chapter on audience analysis, because you need to know what their expectation of you is so that you can deliver a powerful talk each and every time. And every talk will be different. So one of the things that we talk about in the book is not memorizing a script. One of the freeing things for me as a performer, and as I've transitioned from actor into professional speaker, is now I'm not tied to a script. And it concerns me when I see people investing 70, 80, 90% of their prep time in trying to memorize a script, because that will never serve them. And it's one of the first lessons that I learned as an actor. Yes, there is a writer somewhere who put words to a page, and they would be very grateful to you if you said it verbatim. But it is more important that the words are conveyed with the proper emotion and that you understand what the emotion behind the words are than getting the words 100% right.
Yeah, so it's and almost about the intent.
It's all about the intent. Mm-hmm. Why are you saying those words? Mm-hmm. Not what are the words that I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so finding what emotion you want your audience to go on. What is the end takeaway? What is the final goal? What is the ultimate aha that you need them to have? And then how do you serve them? Do you need to make them laugh? Do you need to make them cry? Do you need to make them think and ponder? Like, these are all things that will inform both the language that you choose and the stories that you choose. And this is, again, where knowing yourself and being completely and acutely aware of who you are and why you are and what your story is will allow you to share that in a very powerful way for any audience. And you'll know if you need to make it humorous or if you need to make it tragic or a combination of the above.
Yeah, because as you're saying in the book, once you start breaking down all the elements of your audience, you finally have to come to the conclusion of that, which is, what is your desired outcome?
Mm-hmm.
Right. What is the end goal here? What are you trying to get from this audience or give to the audience? What is your desired outcome? And then I love how you break this down. So first you start the book out with the setup, kind of a little bit about you, but really a lot more about, just like you were saying, how you're going to be even approaching the whole idea of speaking and the purpose behind your speaking. And then you get into practicality. You start talking about the 5 P's.
Yep.
Plan, prepare, practice, present, and participate. And
participate being the key. That's why it's last.
Participate being the key. And you know what I really like about, so planning, again, I can't go through all of these. You're going to have to go buy the book. It's Tyler Foley. I almost said Sean, shoot me in the face with a bazooka. The Power to Speak Naked. And, you know, so one of the things that I really focused in on was you're talking about the preparation aspect of it and the idea of leading with credibility. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times the meeting planner might know who you are. The person who hired you might know. But you get an audience, 500,000, 600,000, 700,000 people. There's going to be a great number of people in there who've never heard of you. And so the first question they ask is, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Why should I care?
Well, and we have a really great resource that is supplemental to the book called the 10-Minute Sales Talk. And although it sounds like it's selling a product, what you're really doing is selling yourself. And one of the first things that we talk about is setting up what is that pinnacle story and structuring your story and structuring any talk or presentation around the hero's journey model. So anybody who's familiar with Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey model, you know that there are multiple steps that a hero takes along his journey. The mistake that a lot of people make when structuring a talk is that they make themselves the hero. And the reality is your audience is the hero. And if you've followed the Joseph Campbell and his and the method when it comes to the hero's journey, it starts with our hero being unaware. And they're in a neutral state. And then a crisis happens that spins them out, at which point they meet a sage or a mentor who guides them through a series of trials and tribulations until they can finally meet their main adversary, overcome and conquer, and then return home the hero. And what a lot of people do with their talks is they focus on them being the hero. I, great, 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 wonderful, 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 conquer, conquer, conquer. A really good presentation is selling an idea. Now, maybe you are actually selling a physical product from the stage, but we are always selling ideas. And in order to do that effectively, instead of being the hero, nobody cares about the hero because we are all the heroes of our own stories. So you need to make your audience the hero, which means that you are the sage or the mentor. And so when, in order to effectively serve your audience, you need to know, well, what do you need to what journey do you need to guide them on? What are you Sherpaing them? Are you going up K2 or are you going up Everest? Because those are two drastically different mountains and drastically different climbs. So, or are you just going up a hill? You know, like, are you just guiding them through the foothills right now, getting them to the base camp? Where do they need to go? And that will inform the story so that you can say, this is why you need to follow me. Because if they don't believe in who you are, they're never going to follow you. Even if you've got all of the tools to help and support them strapped onto your back, they will not follow you up the mountain until they know that you are the expert. So that first thing is setting up and really establishing trust with them. And usually that's by opening up and telling them a story about yourself.
I think it's very smart. And it really wasn't until recently that I've actually started to lead with my own story, because I'm always trying to, for some reason, you know, I like to start way back and come in on this epic tale that I'm going to take you on. And why that fails is because, you know, it's not a movie theater and they're waiting to find out. I'm not answering the first question. The first question is, who are you and why should we listen? And yeah. So I'm, you know, 10 minutes in before I answer that question, and you can just see people like, what? Get to the point. Come on now. What are you? If I had a nickel for every time everybody told me to get to the point.
I remember being asked, I can't remember if it was on an interview like this or if it was in one of my presentations, but somebody asked, when's the best time to present your story? And I said, anytime is a good time, but the sooner the better. And they were looking, they wanted a metric. And I was like, look, I can't tell you that within 30 seconds you should drop that first bit, but it wouldn't be a bad one to start with, you know? And you don't need to worry about introducing yourself, because somebody probably has done that, right? Like, you came on and we're going to have Tyler on the show today. And then you asked me, well, where did you do? And one of the first things, you know, I said, well, my father passed away. Mm-hmm. Now people understand, you know, I've had that tragedy in my life. And there are other stories, like when they're appropriate, there's lots that I can pull from. And I know that because I've done an exercise that I actually teach in all of our workshops. It's not in the book, but in any of the workshops that people come to, we help them break down what is their story or where are their stories, multiple. You know, and the fastest way to do it, and anybody can do it live right now, take your age, divide it by 5, and use that, you know, elementary school, probably third grade math, where you divide to the whole and you get the remainder. take that remainder, tack it on to your very first time period. And that is how you come up with these five time periods in your life. So if I'm to do it for me, I'm 42. Divide by five gives us even increments of eight with a remainder of two. Tack the two on to the beginning. And that gives me 10 and then increments of eight beyond there. So the first thing that happened in my first 10 years of life, you then ask yourself, what is the most significant memory that I have from this time period? For me, I have a few.
Yeah.
So I know right off the bat, if somebody was to ask, what's your most vivid memory from 0 to 10? Instantaneously, I think of the sound that my mom made the day that the RCMP officer and our family doctor came to the door to tell her that my father was never coming home. I know where I was. I know why I was there. I know the sound that she made. I know how it made me feel. I can still, like, I can picture it in my head and I can feel my spine cringe as my mother makes that noise. It's the most animalistic, guttural noise that I've ever heard in my life, and I never want to hear it again. And it has driven most of my decisions here on out. One of my other most prevalent memories from that time period is also auditory, and it's the sound of applause that I got. You know, that sound of a crowd joyously celebrating a performance that I had done. And between those two, those have really pushed who I am for the rest of my life. A sound I never want to hear again, and a sound I desperately seek on a minutely basis. And those have informed every decision that I've made ever since. And, you know, if you look at the next time period, I've had, again, a few. I remember the first time that I actually openly mourned my father's passing. I had a medical incident at 17 that left the left side of my body paralyzed for a year.
Oy vey. And
I know. But hey, look, made it work again. So we're okay. And then, you know, I come to even now. You know, one of my most significant memories now is both the birth of my daughter and then very recently yesterday, dropping her off. She's 6 years old. She started school yesterday.
Wow.
And seeing her get on the school bus for the first time. And again, a flashback, a flood of memories came from that because my father was a teacher and he took me to my elementary school on my first day and kind of that full circle process and where I was when I went to school and like it all came back to me. So that's how we find the stories. We just divide them mm-hmm. into time periods and just say, what is your most significant? You should be able to come up with at least five stories. And then you're not done with the work there. Once yeah. you've got those stories, you have to ask, why is that significant to you?
Why would anybody want to hear it? What is it going to do for them?
Not even why they want to hear it. First of all, why is it important to you? Why does it stick in your memory? Why is it so prevalent in your brain that you cannot forget these five things that happened in your life? Because that's what it will inform why your audience might need to do it. And one of the things that we talk about in the book and one of the things I talk about in all the courses and the resources is your ideal audience is probably you 5 or 10 years ago. So how did these stories influence you? And then what lessons did you learn? And the stories don't have to be tragic.
Thank God.
I just talked, right? They, like so many times people focus on this. Oh, it's so bad. I can think of the birth of my daughter. It's not tragic. It's very joyous. My wife and I getting married. Absolutely a beautiful moment in my life, being valedictorian of my university. You know, the sound of applause the first time that I got them, the feeling and the joy and the rush that I got the first time I was recognized as the top student in my class. All of these things are stories that I can tell and that we can tie back to, and they don't have to be tragic. Yes, I have some tragic ones, you know, loss of my face and body at 17. When I'm just about to graduate, that sucked. My father passing away at 6 years old was awful. But there were lessons in both of those that drastically informed the rest of the decisions that I've made over my life. And that's the key. Finding what the events were, explaining in detail how they occurred, what the lessons you pulled from them are, and your audience will be hooked. They can't help but be drawn in because they want to know more.
1,000,000%. When I was going through this and, you know, I was thinking about what kind of events that happened to me that I think are significant enough to share. And it was when I tasted Chicago deep dish pizza for the first time. Not the same.
That is definitely a thing. And the more specific you can make it, the more relevant it will be. Because trust me, as soon as you said that, I was like, yes, I know. Why doesn't everybody? And why can't they figure out that a square pizza is a good pizza? Round is useless.
Oh, not the same as yours. We're here talking with Tyler Foley. The book is called The Power to Speak Naked. This is the Jay Izzo program called A New Direction. I am Ralph Peterson, and I'm going to go ahead and do a one more copy read if I can figure this out. Here we go. Oh, we're going to do Epic Physical Therapy first. Epic Physical Therapy offers the most advanced top-of-the-line equipment, including the Alter-G anti-gravity treadmill. By the way, if you've never, just for fun, gone on one of these anti-gravity treadmills, they are pretty awesome. They're pretty, I spend a lot of time in long-term care and nursing homes, and there's quite a few homes that have these anti-gravity treadmills, and it just makes it so that you're like running on a cloud. It really makes rehab 10 times better. They also have these compression sleeves and game ready. I don't know what game ready is, but they're trained, they're certified. They have the most comprehensive cutting edge treatments available. They are Epic Relief Therapy, Epic Relief, Epic Recovery, Epic Results. I love, they're called Epic PT, EPICPT.com. And come on, this is great copy reading. Who wouldn't pay for this? Great copy reading. And don't forget Linda Kraft and her team of realtors who are committed to helping you through the process of both selling and buying a home. Even if you're only doing one, I say you do both, but you might be only doing one of those things. And listen, even though now, right now in 2021, it's September 1st, 2021, the market seems to be quite hot. There's a lot of opportunity out there. Linda's been doing this so long that she used to, when she first started in the realtor business, it was 1985 and the interest rate was 18%. And if there's anything that being in this industry for a long time and going through those ups and downs, those booms and those busts in the real estate market, it's one thing you get from all of that, you get experience. And that is what Linda Kraft and her team give you. They give you top-notch experience. They have what it takes to help you take the stress out of selling your home and or, again, buying a home. She knows what it takes. She's been doing it for a long time. All you have to do is ask her raving customers. To find out more about Linda Kraft and her team of realtors, go to lindacraft.com, LindaCraft.com. We are here with Sean Tyler Foley. Sean Tyler Foley, and the book is The Power to Speak Naked. And although we don't have a lot of time left, it's actually good that we don't have a long time left because it's important for you to go out and buy the book instead of listening to me talk about everything about this book. But I do want to focus on a couple more things about just the logistics behind. Well, before I get into the logistics of speaking, which you do a great job talking about, one of the things that you talk about here is how to get an audience back. You lose your audience usually after lunch, right? But you find yourself, you're up there, you're speaking, and you notice some glazed overlooks. Some people have just checked out. What do you do?
Well, so the first thing, and we talk about it in the book, is, you know, one of the best defenses you can have is an offense. And so you make sure that they don't disengage to begin with. So most of the tips and tricks that I give for re-engaging an audience are things that people can use so they don't lose them to begin with. But if they do find that they're getting that glazed over look, that they're drifting off, the first thing that I always, always, always promote is, and it's an overused tool in my toolbox, but it's because it's so effective and it works every time to keep my audience engaged that I don't ever lose them, that I will just never stop using this trick. And that is the turn to a partner and share what your biggest takeaway in the last 15 minutes was.
Get them involved.
Get them involved. And there's a really interesting study that was done. I don't know by who, but I read the statistic. And so I wish I could quote the source, but I cannot. That when you are having a monologue, just a one-way discussion, it's not even a discussion at that point, you're just spewing words at your audience, the engagement is about 78%. If you include them in a dialogue, and that can be with you and them or between themselves, you include them in a dialogue, the engagement goes up to 92%. That's a significant 14% gap that can be filled very quickly by just having them turn to a partner and share what their biggest takeaway in the last 15 minutes was. And if you time it for every 12, 15, 20 minutes, that is going to be really effective for a couple of reasons. When they turn to each other and share, they're actually becoming an echo chamber for your messaging. So they're going to reinforce the messaging that you have created, because no two people will have the same takeaway. They may have picked up the same point, but how they applied it to themselves is different. So person A will say, oh yeah, I liked when he talked about this. And then person B will be like, yes, I like that too, because this is what it meant to me. And they go, oh, I didn't think about that. And they have this conversation and they're engaged because they're sharing their experience. So not only are they now engaged because A, especially if you get them to physically stand up, you've combined movement with it. So you've gotten them out of their chairs. They're physically engaged. They're mentally engaged now because they're having to actively think back to what it was that you said and what sunk with them. Then they explain it to a partner on why. And now you have twice reinforced your message because one person did it and then another person did it. So you've said a thing, now it's been reinforced twice, you've got them engaged, and then they sit down, and then you come back onto the content. Advanced pro tip to that.
Yes.
You have them bubble up, right? Okay, now who is comfortable sharing what one of your takeaways was?
Oh.
And if you do that, now you have reinforced your message a third time. Everybody has reheard the one takeaway, and it gives you a check on if they are receiving your message the way that you expected it. So now you can check that what they said was actually understood the way that you wanted it to. And now it allows you to either reinforce it as a yes, exactly, and move on, or course correct and say, well, but when I said that, don't forget that this is why it's important. And so those are some really advanced, it's great if you're a trainer, it's great if you're a presenter, to get feedback from the audience and find out how well your message is landing. Because remember, ultimately, you're trying to serve them. And if they're walking away going, yeah, no, nuclear war really is justified, you're like, whoa, 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 that is not what I said, you know?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. You know, when I was reading the book, and I got to that part, and the book, again, of course, is called The Power to Speak Naked, and we are talking to the great Sean Tyler Foley, if you're looking at the book title. There's this one little thing that I do. I speak on management a lot, and one thing that you find, or I find, is a lot of places they never invite assistant managers, and so they're always just the managers and above, and that's it. There's nobody under the manager there, which is funny because the whole point is to train the assistant manager, but then they never allowed to bring in the training, right? So I have this thing where I'm always like, you know, and I start talking about assistant managers, and I want to pretend I'm going to badmouth them. And so I say, oh, before I go, are there any assistant managers here? And inevitably, not a hand is ever raised. And so I can follow up with, good, let's talk about it, right? That's the setup. I'm expecting the outcome. Good. Let's talk about them. Right after lunch, I'm talking to this large group and I say, is there any assistant managers here? And a woman in the front row raises her hand. I'm an assistant manager. I was like, who let you in? Right? Like, it totally took me off my game. But less than 5 minutes later, she's sleeping. She is legit nodded out. I still bad want her from the stage go, and that's why we don't bring a sister man, you know. So.
And that was the talk you were never invited back to.
Right? That was the talk. No, I didn't do it. I wanted to. The final thing I want to talk about is learning how to close. So we've discussed so much already. We talked about how the importance of knowing your audience. We understood. We talked about the importance of understanding what it is you're talking to, what you're trying to convey, what you're trying to say, the takeaway you're trying to get, what your end is. But we haven't really talked about the close yet. So can we talk about just how to close, learn how to close?
Well, so first of all, that's when you need to ultimately be confident in what your messaging is. You have to know deep down inside that you have provided the most value ever and that no one else could have done it better than you, which is always easier when you're telling your story as opposed to trying to present someone else's information. But as much as I don't like to memorize a talk, and I don't. I use bullet points to guide me through. I usually equate it to if I need to take a journey somewhere. Say I want to go across town to a shop that I've never been to before. Two things that I need to know before I ever start that journey to enter it into my GPS. Where am I starting from? Where am I going?
Amazing.
I have to know what the end destination is. The problem with a scripted talk, locking yourself into very specific word choice, is that it doesn't allow you to detour if there's an accident on the highway. You may have to go through a couple communities. Maybe you want to pick up a coffee along the way that you weren't planning. Maybe you have to go to the bathroom before your meeting. Like all of these things, if you are locked into a script, you get no coffee, you're stuck on that highway until that traffic jam goes, and you don't get to go to the bathroom. You know, you need to have flexibility, and that's why I memorize themes and concepts and bullet points and understand the stories that I would intend to use to support them, with the flexibility then to interject a different story if I feel that it is more relevant, or delete that altogether. Like that is just a waypoint that we are not stopping at today because I only have 10 minutes to get to my destination and this journey was only supposed to be 30 minutes and we are 29 in. We've got 4 minutes left, so how do we wrap this up? I need to know that at the end, I'm going to have a very specific memorized close. It does a couple of things for me. It triggers my body. It knows that when I start saying these words, that is the end. It stops me from rambling and continuing on after the end is the end. And it cues the audience to know that this is the finality and allows them to actually stand up and celebrate the information that you've presented. So memorizing a very prescribed, very specific close and knowing that you can jump to it at any time, scripting it in a way that it doesn't matter what you are doing, you can cut into it is the best way to close and know why you're closing. What is the end destination? Are you trying to just stop the talk? Are you trying to sail? Are you trying to direct people to a call to action? What are you trying to accomplish with your close?
That is perfect. It's exactly the right timing, because how do people get a hold of you now? If they want to buy the book, if they want to hire you, if they want to see you, speak with you, what do they do?
Well, all things for me can be found at SeanTylerFoley.com. We didn't tell them. Sean is spelled the proper Irish way, SeanTylerFoley. So if they go to SeanTylerFoley.com, they can pick up anything and everything that they want on me. They can find out my speaking schedule. They can pick up the courses. They can get some of our free resources. Anything that's available. Anybody who hasn't bought in the book, to know that you can scan the QR code inside the book to get our free resources. Those are available on the website. And then if they want to pick up a copy of the book themselves, the book will be available in bookstores worldwide September 7th, because this is a live broadcast. But for anybody who's watching the replay of this, or anybody who's watching live, I would encourage you, if you could do me a favor, and that is go to bookshop.org.
Bookshop.org.
What that will do is that will connect you with your local book retailer if you're in the United States. Anybody else, if your worldwide audience is looking, go to Barnes & Noble or somewhere else. Jeff Bezos just flew to space. We don't need to support his website anymore, but Barnes & Noble and all the rest of that. But if you're in the States, bookshop.org will connect you with your local book retailer and allows you to purchase any title. So if you want to get The Power to Speak Naked, great. If you want to get Lessons from the Farm and support Jay and his book, you can get that at bookshop.org, and it will connect you with your local book retailer. You can also usually get the titles cheaper. So my book retails for $17.95. I believe on bookshop.org, it's under $16. Doesn't save you a lot, but it saves you a little, and they donate their proceeds to support local bookstores that are struggling. And especially in this day and age, that is an important thing to do. Support your mom and pop shops. Support the brick and mortar stores that have kept your community alive for so long. by absolutely. Ordering your books from there. And again, whether it's mine, whether it's Jay's, or whether it's some fanciful title that you want to get, bookshop.org is the best place to go to do it if you're in the States.
The Power to Speak Naked by Sean Tyler Foley. I want to just thank real quick Jay Izzo for giving me the opportunity to shine like a butterfly over here. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for doing this. I think I'm going to be back in a couple of weeks to host another one of A New Direction for Jay Izzo, so I'm excited about that. Otherwise, thank you so much, Tyler, for being on with me. Thank you for sharing your book with us. And for A New Direction, I'm Ralph Peterson. He's Tyler Foley. That's it.
A new direction, a brand new day. A new direction, things are gonna change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come, your dreams will take.